Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back to the dialogue on Reality Check Radio. I am your host, Ewa De Boer, and joining me now is James Vigiano, who is a Bitcoin advocate and enthusiast. He has been on the show before, so let's welcome him back. It's good to speak with you again, James.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Now, just in case we have new listeners who didn't listen to the previous interview that we did in May or who know nothing about Bitcoin other than what they might have heard from the media or detractors, what is Bitcoin? Why is it so important? You know, give us your elevator pitch that I'm sure you've given 100 times before.
Yeah. Well, at a high level, Bitcoin is money, but it isn't issued by a government. So that's generating a lot of interest around the world with all the political risks that are happening at the moment. And another key aspect of Bitcoin is that the way that to achieve being decentralized from the government is through proof of work, which means that the currency is backed by real energy. Real energy expenditure goes into it. And it also has, it's got a fixed monetary policy. Basically, that means that there's no central issuer like a central bank that can create more out of thin air and debase or dilute the value of everyone else's Bitcoin. So it's a fixed supply, decentralized, non-government money.
And I mean, this is obviously revolutionized the world in many ways since it was first launched. And I should know the date, but maybe you remember when Bitcoin started.
The white paper which proposed Bitcoin brought together a bunch of ideas that had come out since the 90s. They brought it together in 2008 during the height of the previous financial crisis. And then the actual first block of the blockchain, which is the shared decentralized ledger that we're all using to record transactions, the first Bitcoin payment happened in January 3rd, 2009. So 15 years ago, 16 years maybe.
And it's quite fascinating actually to see, you know, what's happened since the great financial crisis of 2008 and, you know, a few programmers who thought, hey, we can fix the problems that caused the financial crisis, the problems that are caused by devaluing the currency and loaning out money that doesn't exist. And it's come to the point now where we at least have one country, El Salvador, that's adopted Bitcoin as a currency. And we've had, you know, just an election in the United States, and you've got senators, congressmen, even the president talking about setting up a strategic Bitcoin reserve, basically officially adopting, holding Bitcoin as an asset for the United States, which is the superpower. And that's quite a big win in terms of, if you think of all the other challenges the US dollar has come up against, the one that's turned out to be the most successful has been Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I initially thought that Bitcoin was going to replace the dollar as the global reserve currency. That was kind of the trend that we were seeing. But what's actually the turn of events that's happened in recent years is that the US has been a first mover to embrace Bitcoin, and that's actually strengthened their currency relative to other currencies. Today, production of Bitcoin, that mining process, which is just electricity and data centers being used to secure the network, more than half or around 50% of that is happening in the US. So the Bitcoin that we buy in New Zealand, we're actually importing it from the US. The US are exporters of Bitcoin to the world, and that's strengthening their currency and giving it real solid backing. And then, as you mentioned, the president made a campaign promise that the Treasury of the United States should add Bitcoin to its strategic reserves in a similar way to how they have Fort Knox, where they have gold in their reserves.
And there has been a massive renewed interest in Bitcoin as well since we last spoke in May. The price then was around 100,000 New Zealand dollars, you know, fluctuating up and down by sometimes, you know, 10,000 or more. It's now at over 150,000. That's a 50% jump in 6 months. Is this normal for Bitcoin? You know, is this what, you know, adopters, maybe somebody listened to the show in May and they're like, oh, cool, I'll get a little bit of Bitcoin. Is this what they can expect? At what point should they panic? At what point is somebody to say, oh, cool, I'm now rich, I'm done with Bitcoin? You know, what happens with the Bitcoin price? And how do these cycles work where people get really excited and you know, sometimes get a little bit too carried away, right? People go crazy.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the word panic. Absolutely don't panic. When people panic, they get carried away and then they overexpose themselves and they get wrecked. Speaking from experience, of course, I think most Bitcoiners have experienced this. It's called fear of missing out. You're not missing out on anything. The best way to accumulate your Bitcoin savings, first of all, you should view it as savings in a non-government currency, a foreign currency. So you should be dollar cost averaging into it, slow and steady, a little bit of your paycheck, putting it aside, the same way you use KiwiSaver to dollar cost average into investments. In fact, you can now put Bitcoin into your KiwiSaver using the smart Bitcoin ETF we have here in New Zealand, or the US ETFs. With this run up in Bitcoin's price, it is cyclical. It does happen roughly every 4 years, because there is a mechanism in Bitcoin where every 4 years, the rate at which the new Bitcoin that gets produced cuts in half. And that creates a bit of a shortage of Bitcoin. And it just so happens that that shortage that happened at the start of this year, the cutting in half of the new supply, happens to also coincide with a lot of new excitement about Bitcoin. So you've got a whole bunch of new first-time buyers, while you've also got the regular miners who are selling Bitcoin, selling half as much as they used to. So it does cause a bit of a squeeze higher. But usually, whatever level we get to is unsustainable, and there's a bear market for multiple years, and that's the best time to be accumulating Bitcoin. That was the previous 3 years. And so you just have to be patient, slow and steady. And if you're someone who already has a huge amount of savings in Bitcoin, well, you can help alleviate the shortage right now by going out and spending your Bitcoin and stimulating the economy. It's no coincidence that right now is the best time to buy things. The Black Friday sales, or the, you know, going out of business stock clearance sales that are happening all across the country in both goods and services and also real estate. You get your pick of the litter of what you want to buy, and you're actually choosing who you want to bail out and what part of the economy you want to see grow into the future. So absolutely should be spending your Bitcoin if you already have some. And if you don't have some, don't FOMO into it, because that's just going to set you up for 3 years of painful hodling during a bear market.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, because that's how I get most people into Bitcoin, actually, is like they're not interested, you know, when things are quiet, but when it's going up and up and up, then they're interested. So what I'll usually say is, okay, I'll help you get in. We'll get a little bit, we'll get you set up. I'll give you advice, you know, when the price drops, you know, then you should actually buy more. Often they don't. But I said, whatever you do, just don't look at it for 3 years then, or whatever. 4 years, promise me that you won't touch anything. And I've never had any failures. I've never had someone come back to me after 4 years and say, oh, you were wrong. You know, they're always happy after at least 4 years, everyone's happy with Bitcoin. We should differentiate here as well between Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and other coins, where those can be quite disastrous, where they get hyped up, they get manipulated in some way. People buy in at the top and then there's never another top, and they lose their money and they get burned. So I know people who have gotten into, you know, cryptocurrency, which is basically like gambling. I would say it's probably the best description. Get into gambling, basically, and they get burned out and they have a terrible experience. I've never had people get into Bitcoin and had a bad experience, basically, as long as they've held on, stayed calm for at least a period of 3 or 4 or 5 years. And
yeah,
and that trend now is held, as we say, for 15 years. So we can assume with increasing adoption that trend will hold out. As we see governments get interested, as we see financial companies get interested, Bitcoin is now here to stay. I think the naysayers, there will still be naysayers, and I'm happy if there are listeners who want to write in and say they don't believe in Bitcoin. Happy to answer any questions. But it's important that, as far as I can tell, all of the financial companies are basically saying Bitcoin is here. It's part of the economy, part of the global economy. And it's looked different as well than, as you referred to, I remember in the early days as well, thinking, oh, Bitcoin is going to be a currency and replace the US dollar. And it's turned into something different. And Bitcoin is very adaptable in that sense, that it's simply, you know, carries on, and whatever the situation is, whatever the geopolitical situation that Bitcoin adapts, you can't really predict that. You can just get on the train and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up some really good points there. So right now, during the excitement and fear of missing out around Bitcoin, there are people out there who get an idea of how can they get more Bitcoin. And the way they want to get more Bitcoin is they create a new token that they market as being better than Bitcoin. And what they're actually trying to do is get your Bitcoin off you. They're trying to sell you something that isn't Bitcoin and take your Bitcoin off you. Not too dissimilar from the stock market. So I'm not trying to say that all of it is scams. Some people might be raising Bitcoin as capital to do a legitimate business, but you're taking a huge risk. You're betting on someone else using that Bitcoin to grow a business and then to return that capital to you as the investor. So that's speculative gambling, as you say, and has nothing really to do with Bitcoin other than proof that people want Bitcoin. So avoiding crypto is a great thing to do during a bull market, because you're going to see a lot of, they have better marketing budgets than Bitcoin because they're all centralized with a marketing department, whereas Bitcoin doesn't have a marketing department. And yeah, the other point about the changing kind of use case of Bitcoin, it is interesting that it's becoming this global reserve asset, the safe haven that people are using right now during like a global recession and, you know, the threats of World War III that are happening. So it's becoming a safe haven, so a store of value. And it's not really replacing the dollar or fiat currencies in your day-to-day exchange yet at like a cafe or a restaurant. But there is a whole other sector of the digital economy where it's only Bitcoin that you can use. And that's the micropayment economy on the new decentralized social media network called Nosta. Basically, instead of liking someone's post or retweeting someone's post, you zap them some sats. And sats are the little micro little pieces of Bitcoin. So you're giving someone 1 cent, 2 cent when you like their content. And that's kind of redefining the way people are approaching content creation and distribution online. And it's very hard for the US dollar to do that when the payment rails that it currently transacts on, like Visa, have very high fees to be able to use it and very strict compliance requirements that make it very difficult to use. So it is still growing in the medium of exchange area too.
And just to speak about exchanging Bitcoin here in New Zealand, like I've had to do it a few times recently, and it's actually quite easy to buy and sell and get New Zealand dollars in your bank account. And it happens very, very quickly. Not as fast as maybe an FPOS transaction or a direct transfer between banks, but when you compare it to interbank transfers or international transfers, it's actually very, very quickly to you can settle Bitcoin transactions very easily. And something that I have done a number of times now, and I'm 100% confident in how it works. So that's also a good thing that used to be very, very difficult.
And on that particular point, New Zealand is now leading the way. We have, I would say, I've been looking at how other countries are doing it. We have probably the best integration of Bitcoin into our financial system ever with Lightning Pay, which is that New Zealand startup out of the South Island. Those guys have made it so that using the open banking APIs, you can connect any New Zealand bank account to Lightning Pay. And then within 20 seconds, they can pull the New Zealand dollars out of your bank account and put Lightning Bitcoin, which is those little sats, those little pieces of Bitcoin I talked about, put them into your Lightning wallet, whatever Lightning wallet you want to use. And so within 30 seconds, you can get capital out of New Zealand and into the global Bitcoin capital pool, which also means within another 30 seconds, you can spend it anywhere globally. So the New Zealand dollar now is very fast and is very global with the direction of paying. So the exporting of dollars is very quick now. And what we're trying to work on, and where the central bank might be able to help, is in the other direction, speeding up the way that when people come to New Zealand or the tourists come with their Bitcoin, speeding up the way that they can convert their Bitcoin into New Zealand dollars. Potentially the central bank digital cash could help with that, because if it's actually going to be digital cash, then it should be available to tourists who don't need a bank account. So that's an exciting direction that we're heading in here.
Yeah, and obviously it's an entirely different subject on if you're someone who loves cash, and then talking about digital currency, those are two separate conversations that sometimes come into conflict, where people are very worried that their real cash is going to get replaced with digital cash. And on that subject, I actually had an experience going from digital cash to real cash, and on a holiday recently, where I was in Japan, and they spend a lot of real cash. But that was still quite a difficult situation, kind of, to go from, all right, how do you go from, say, for instance, Bitcoin to physical yen? That's quite a difficult thing to do. You're getting like New Zealand dollars into yen. And it was a bit of a journey. Like, I, you know, it worked all right for me, and it worked quite efficiently in the grand scheme of things. But definitely that was a very difficult journey, you know, from where you ideally wanted to be.
Yeah, I had a similar experience in Thailand recently, although I managed to find a service that allowed me to walk up to any Thai ATM and then withdraw cash, Thai baht, from the ATM, but pay with Bitcoin. It was using a third party in the middle, but it's because the ATMs there let you sign in with a QR code, and so the third party was signing in for me remotely and let me withdraw cash. It's interesting that digital currency definitely can be a threat to privacy, but digital cash can be done in a private way. That's what we're discovering with this technology called Xiaomi and eCash. And so it will be up to our central bank what direction they want to go. I do believe them when they talk repeatedly about wanting it to be private, but whether that's how they execute is still yet to be seen. But they keep telling us if we want physical cash to stay around, we have to start using it more. So maybe what we need to see is more of these Bitcoin ATMs around the country, so at least the tourists can come in, buy their Kiwi cash, and then go spend their cash at all the shops.
And one more subject here on how the Bitcoin network is secured. And we spoke about geothermal energy last time. There have actually been some developments in El Salvador around using geothermal energy. And the New Zealand government has recently announced that that we're looking to expand, I think even double our geothermal capacity. Is this a real good opportunity for Bitcoin mining in New Zealand? And could you explain kind of how that works? Like, how would Bitcoin mining in New Zealand using our geothermal energy enhance, you know, both Bitcoin and the New Zealand economy?
Oh, it's a fantastic opportunity. Bitcoin mining and geothermal energy, they go hand in hand really well. So when you create new energy generation, like they're talking about bringing online 30,000 megawatts more of electricity, that's a lot. That if you produce too much electricity and no one in the grid needs it, you actually have to pay a cost, a curtailment cost, to get rid of it, because you can't overload the grid. And so the perfect pairing to fund the development and expansion of energy generation in New Zealand is Bitcoin data centers, because what they do is they soak up all their electricity when the grid doesn't need it. And they very happily can precisely turn up or turn down the amount that they're using. So if the grid needs more electricity, well, they'll sell the amount they're using back to the grid to help keep electricity prices in check. This kind of load balancing that's happening has helped the Texas grid to expand massively over the last 4 to 5 years. And when I talk about Bitcoin data centers and geothermal energy in New Zealand, what I'm trying to do is attract the global investors and also any New Zealanders that want to pull together capital to do it, trying to get them to fund the expansion of our energy generation, because that's what the Bitcoin data center does. It signs a 10-year, 20-year agreement where they commit to buying a minimum amount of gigawatts, and then they also commit to providing the flexible load. They call it demand response. So it basically means that they are the most responsible industrial user of electricity, because they don't hog the electricity. They happily give it back to the grid.
And this is very different to situations that we have politically in New Zealand, like the aluminium smelter, Tiwai Point, and then negotiations about when they get to use electricity and how much and why that's broken down, because obviously they need constant demand and they can't just they don't want to just turn it off when people need to turn on their heaters.
It's a bit trickier for them because it takes them time to turn it on and it takes them time to turn it off, and they have an end customer, the people buying their aluminium, that they have to supply to, whereas a Bitcoin mining data center doesn't have an end customer. It's just turning electricity into Bitcoin. But if it's more profitable to turn electricity into New Zealand dollars, it will do that by selling it back to the grid. And it can instantly and precisely dial down its usage. So whenever there's a spike in demand for electricity, it can immediately cut its usage, whereas a smelter takes a lot of time to wind down. TY has become a lot more flexible because of the strong negotiations that Meridian and stuff were doing. So they are trying to provide demand response, but for them it's like they're planning 3 months ahead in time and planning for the winters, whereas Bitcoin is more like day to day, they can provide demand response.
And in terms of securing the Bitcoin network as well, you know, as you said, the United States has become a very big adopter of Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And you know, Donald Trump has even promised a Bitcoin reserve. We'll see if that happens. And this was important because geopolitically, at one point, there was a lot of, I guess the Bitcoin network was largely secured by miners and energy in third world countries or Eastern countries. And there was, you know, tension between players. Having Bitcoin mining, you know, electricity, proof of work happening in New Zealand also helps to spread out the security of the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps to decentralize the security of the network, which makes the value of Bitcoin and its security promise even stronger, but it also helps to back the New Zealand dollar with real value. So right now, every Bitcoin that you buy in New Zealand, you're importing it from the US, which means you're selling New Zealand dollars and you're buying US dollars. That's why the New Zealand dollar 10 years ago in 2014, the New Zealand dollar was almost worth $1. It was worth like 92 cents US. And now it's worth like 50 cents, 60 cents, I don't know what, but it's been going down.
And it's getting worse, right? And obviously inflation is driving this too in New Zealand, New Zealand economy, and the money that we spent on COVID lockdowns and the economic situation there, the money that we've spent on various disasters over the last 10, 15 years, just lots and lots of new dollars being created in New Zealand that are devaluing our currency. And Bitcoin is one of the ways to sort of turn this around, because of the fact that Bitcoin is a deflationary currency, not an inflationary currency, because there's a limited amount, and there never will be any more beyond that fixed 21 million Bitcoin.
It'll help us stem the capital outflows that are currently happening. The New Zealand economy will start to be a bit more circular, where New Zealanders will be buying Bitcoin from New Zealand suppliers of Bitcoin, keeping it all within our economy and helping to prevent the massive outflow of money. So the way that the US is getting strength right now is that it's hoovering up all of the global currencies are going there, because they're all going there to buy their Bitcoin. So if we produce our own Bitcoin, that would be great.
Now, quickly here then, before you go, can you give me some advice then? How do people who are listening, they haven't really got into Bitcoin, how do they get into this very, very easily? How do they get a couple of these Satoshis, these little Bitcoin cents, into a secure wallet they control, and just to try things out? You know, I know it's a bull market at the moment, the price is going up, maybe it goes down in a few months' time or a year's time, but how do they just get a little bit and try it out and not risk too much, and just, like you say, dollar cost average?
Yeah, so the starting point is probably try to get your first couple of dollars of Bitcoin, and you don't even have to pay for it. You can just try to earn it online. The easiest way to receive Bitcoin is if you have a Lightning address. A Lightning address looks like an email address. And so there's lots of different Lightning address providers. There's blink.sv or there's coinos.io. They're really simple to use ones. They're custodial, which means you're trusting someone else with your Bitcoin. But for your first few couple of dollars of Bitcoin they're earning, that's totally fine. You get your Lightning address. It might be your name at blink.sv. You go on to the internet, you go on to Nostr, you add that to your profile, you start putting yourself out there, and people might start tipping you little bits of Bitcoin. Or if you just want to spend $10 on Bitcoin, sign up to lightningpay.nz. They'll sell you $10 worth of Bitcoin instantly and put it in your Lightning address. And then start spending it online, seeing how it's money. You send it back and forth with your friends. And once you get, you know, a proper amount of Bitcoin in your savings, which might take a while, but once you have, let's say, $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, absolutely look into what's called self-custody. That's where you're taking responsibility for the money. You're not trusting it with a third party. And the easiest way to do that is probably with a little hardware wallet. Popular ones or affordable ones are the Blockstream Jade. That's probably $50. Or you can step it up to a CoinKite cold card. That's probably $100. Maybe $200. So it doesn't make sense for your first, you know, you need to have a decent amount of savings to really get into that level. But once you do, that then becomes your Bitcoin, this little hardware device, and you can learn about how to secure that. And then if you're really, you know, when you get serious and you're putting you've got a large amount of savings in Bitcoin, you do have to learn about something called multi-sig. That might be overwhelming. So there's lots of collaborative multi-sig partners, especially out of the US. There's Swan Bitcoin or Unchained Capital. They provide a collaborative partnership to help you secure your Bitcoin in what's called a 2 of 3 multi-sig. I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but there's lots of things you can do. And then the final thing would be if you already have investment infrastructure in place in the traditional system, like you invest in shares, well, you can now bet on Bitcoin using Bitcoin ETFs. And there's, in the US, there's BlackRock's one and there's Fidelity's one. And then in New Zealand, there's a Smart Bitcoin ETF, which is just a New Zealand dollar version of the BlackRock one. So they're quite easy to just dollar cost average into as part of your KiwiSaver or your weekly sharesies or whatever it is you're doing.
Cool. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I could add as well of kind of how I got started was kind of, you can get, there are Bitcoin wallet apps on your phone that you can install, and then you get an address, and you can either get your friend to send you some, or you can, you know, there are companies.
Yeah,
as well.
Send your Lightning address.
There's also, I've used them, so they're good, but Easy Crypto in New Zealand, New Zealand-based company that, again, you can send them New Zealand dollars and they will send Bitcoin to the address that you give them. And of course, yeah, that's not the best way to secure large amounts of it, but it's another way to just simply get into it and be able to see, oh yes, cool, I have some Bitcoin, it's on my phone. Not the most secure place to keep it, but you know, there are ways to go from there to just get started.
About reaching out to your Bitcoiner friends, just send them your Lightning address and say, hey, send me some sats, and they might send you a dollar's worth. And that's a fun way to really start the conversation again with people about Bitcoin and show them that you're open to it, especially if a lot of people were dismissive of Bitcoin at first, and people might rub each other off the wrong way. Like, if you have friends that were into Bitcoin, you haven't talked to them for a while, just reach out to them.
That sounds good. And of course, there are Bitcoin groups as well, right? I remember you mentioned to me last time that there's
we've got monthly meetups in Auckland, and there's meetups in Wellington and Christchurch. These are more just casual, going to a bar, talking about Bitcoin. Makes you feel a bit more sane knowing that there's other people in the real world that are into it too. Mm-hmm.
And I was going to mention this earlier on as well about, you know, I guess the influence of Bitcoin as well in the US election, but there I might as well mention it now. They were, I think, some of the most successful campaigns in terms of how much money they spent. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars were spent by Bitcoin enthusiasts and advocates who wanted to improve the regulation in the United States on electing friendly senators and congressmen and so on. So there's a very, you know, I think they were called the Bitcoin lobby. But basically, it's at that point now where there's a lot of people with a lot of money who are very, very serious about this. So this adds to the fact that, you know, Bitcoin is here to stay, and just keep learning about it, get on board. That's really my advice, because we're still early, you know, it's still the early days. It's only 15 years into the Bitcoin network, and there's a long road ahead of us.
Yeah, it's definitely like the early days of the internet. We're still using dial-up internet. We're using dial-up Bitcoin, but it's only getting faster and better every year.
Well, thank you very much. And let us know as well. Let us know. I think it's a Twitter account that you've got as your easiest accessible social media, but go and find James Viggiano on Twitter. Go and find him on Nostr if you want to try out the decentralized social media network. And that's it. Thank you for joining me today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to, or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.